Senator Olson turned toward one of the gunmen.
What do you think, Bannister? Can we make it look like Injun slaughtered the lot of them?
Yep, I reckon.
All the other members of the expedition stared at Olson in amazement, including his two aides. Obviously, they knew nothing about Olson's treachery and his connection to the Indian ring.
I think you're forgetting something. I still got my gun pointed at the senator here.
Bannister shook his head.
That's not really a problem, Preacher. You see, the fellow who gave us our orders, the fellow who's paying us, said we ought to keep Olson safe if we could. But the most important thing is, you wind up dead.
You can't be serious. You work for my associates.
And they're not all that worried about you staying alive.
Preacher glanced along the train as Olson turned pale with fear. All the senator's arrogance and confidence fled him in the blink of an eye. Preacher saw several rifle barrels sticking out of the windows in the passenger cars. Most of them were aimed at him, but the members of the hunting party were close to the line of fire. When the shooting started, some of them might get hurt. But the Indian ring's hired assassins meant to kill them anyway, so they might as well go down fighting. Preacher wasn't the only one thinking that way. Countess Helena Markova suddenly jerked her rifle to her shoulder.
Jester, get down!
Bannister's head jerked back. The slug from Helena's rifle left a red-rimmed hole in his forehead as it bored through his brain and exploded out the back of his skull in a grisly spray of blood and gray matter. Bannister's knees unhinged and dropped him to the platform. He was dead before he got there.
Everybody scatter!
Preacher threw himself out of the saddle to the ground.
I'm both too old for this.
The stallion lunged away from the train as Preacher scrambled to his feet, aching from head to foot. The pain didn't stop him or even slow him down as he dashed toward the train, triggering both Remingtons at the windows the rifles were poking out of. It was Olson's bad luck to be too close to the mountain man. The hired killers sprayed lead at Preacher, and the senator was in the way of some of the slugs. Preacher bounded to the platform of one of the cars and kicked the door open as bullets whined around him. The assassins who'd been crouched at the windows whirled toward him. Preacher thumbed fresh cartridges into the Remingtons and crouched, holding both guns. A glance out the south windows of the car revealed the killer's horses. He and the others hadn't seen the animals as they rode up. Out the north windows lay several bodies. Olson, of course, but also Jennings, one of his aides, and Count Markova. From the looks of the bodies, both men were dead. The Preacher would feel sorry for them later. He had to concentrate on saving his own hide and those of the others from the hunting party. Looked like they had scattered and were hiding somewhere. Preacher turned at the sound of light steps on the car platform and saw Helena, hunting rifle in hand.
Helena, get under cover! I gotta find the train crew!
Preacher, the rest of them are headed for the engine! I saw them!
Preacher ran through the train toward the engine, hoping Helena would have sense enough to lie low now that she had warned him. Somehow, he didn't think so. Preacher managed to climb into the coal tender when a barrage of bullets filled the air from the cab of the locomotive. He was pinned down, at least as far as going forward was concerned.
Preacher! Preacher!
The soft-voiced call came from below him. He scuttled backward and saw Helena looking up at him. She had climbed onto the coupling between the tender and the next car in line. She had discarded her rifle and had a six-gun she'd picked up somewhere.
I'll go along the ledge on the side of the tender and distract them. That will give you a chance to go over the top to the cab.
You'll get your dang fool self killed.
Helena tossed those blonde curls defiantly.
They want to kill all of us anyway. What does it matter?
Looking at her like that, gun in hand, face smudged with powder smoke, Preacher grinned at her.
Woman, you are a pistol.
Helena smiled and began to slip along the narrow walkway on the side of the coal tender. Preacher waited, his nerves drawn taut as he did so. creature leaped to his feet and charged recklessly over the pile of coal. The four gunmen were trying to get a shot at Helena, but they saw Preacher coming and jerked their Colts upward at him. Preacher unlimbered the Remingtons, showering lead down like an avenging angel. The bullets drove the men back against the front of the cab. One by one, they collapsed as Preacher's bullets tore through them. The fight was over in a matter of heartbeats.
Countess, you all right?
I'm fine. What about you?
I'll be mighty sore come morning, but right now I ain't got no complaints.
Preacher holstered his guns. He climbed down into the cab and started reloading as he stood next to the pile of bullet-riddled corpses. Helena climbed around the end of the tender and swung into the cab to join him.
Such savagery. You're like a Cossack in my country, Preacher.
Well, I don't know nothing about no Cossacks.
He snapped one of the Remingtons closed.
I just don't cotton to it when varmints try to kill me or other innocent folks. Speaking of which, I'm sorry, but it looked like the count was hit when the ball started.
I know, and I am sorry too. Even though our marriage was not good, Alexei was not really a bad man. I am sure I will shed tears for him later.
We better go see who else was hurt and how bad.
They found the other members of the hunting party hiding in the caboose.
Hey now, easy!
Packard lowered the gun he'd gotten hold of.
Sorry about that. We were going to put up a fight.
Jennings, Count Markova, and Senator Olson were the only fatalities beside the hired killers, all eight of whom had been wiped out by Preacher and Helena. Jiggers Dunlop and Jasper McCormick had both suffered minor wounds, but McCormick was too excited to feel much pain.
What a story this will make!
Preacher didn't care about that.
Why are these Washington bigwigs suddenly so interested in getting rid of me?
I might be able to shed some light on that, sir. As you know, the train crew set up a telegraphic communication here at the siding in case Washington needed to get in touch with the senator.
You're saying he got a wire from back east?
You got a wire. From Colorado.
Gearhard held out a telegraph flimsy. Frowning in surprise, Preacher took it.
What is it? What does it say?
It's from a friend. Well, more like family, really. Fellow named Smoke Jensen. He says his adopted brother Matt is in some sort of trouble down in Nevada at a place called Halltown. Smoke wants me to meet him there as quick as I can.
If the railroad goes anywhere near there, you can be there in no time at all. Skillern, Dunlop, and I all have some influence with this line, and after everything you've done, we'll see that you get what you need.
I'm obliged.
But how does that so-called Indian ring tie in with it?
I don't know, but Smoke, Matt, and I crossed trails with them before, and I ain't surprised they want us dead. They must have found out somehow that Matt sent for us to help him, and they're trying to stop us from getting there.
Then this other friend of yours, this man called Smoke, he could be in danger too?
Yeah, but if the ring's sending gun wolves after Smoke, they better damn well send more than they did after me. Elsewise, it ain't gonna be nowhere near a fair fight.
Smoke stepped down from the train that had rolled into the Southern Pacific Depot in Reno a minute or so earlier. It had been a whirlwind trip from Big Rock after sending the telegram to Preacher in care of the newspaper-sponsored hunting expedition. Smoke caught the first train to Denver, taking the Palouse with him in a stock car. From there, he traveled as quickly as possible to Reno, which was as close as he could get to Halltown by train. Preacher's group was somewhere north of Cheyenne on the Union Pacific line that was running in that direction. He and Smoke were supposed to leave word for each other at the Reno Depot when they arrived. So as soon as Smoke saw to having the Palouse and his gear unloaded, he walked over to the station master's office and knocked on the door.
Come in.
The black-suited, balding man in the office looked up from a paper-littered desk.
Can I help you?
My name is Jensen. A friend of mine is supposed to be arriving in Reno at any time, and we agreed to leave word for each other. He's an old mountain man who goes by the name of Preacher.
No, I haven't talked to anybody like that. You might ask the ticket clerks or even the telegrapher.
I'll do that. But I reckon it's more likely he would have talked to you since you're in charge.
Well, I'll keep an eye out for him. Can't promise anything, though.
He looked down at his paperwork, signaling to Smoke that the conversation was over. Then he glanced up again with his eyebrows lifting.
Jensen. Well, not Smoke Jensen.
That's what they call me.
The station master stood up, came quickly around the desk, and extended his hand.
I've heard a lot about you. It's a pleasure to meet you, sir.
Likewise.
Smoke accepted the handshake.
What brings you to Reno? Not trouble, I hope.
Smoke decided it might be worth talking to the station master for a few minutes.
I'm actually headed to a settlement called Halltown. I looked it up on the map in the Denver Depot, and I saw that it's north of Hereways.
You mean Helltown?
No, I don't think so.
Sorry, you're right, of course. It's Halltown, but I've heard some folks have started using that other name for it.
Somehow, Smoke was not surprised that Matt had wound up in trouble in a place that had been dubbed Helltown.
There's a spur line being built up in that direction, isn't there?
The station master's jovial attitude turned serious.
That's right. Cyrus Longacre's putting it in.
What sort of man is he?
I couldn't really say.
You've never met him?
I've met him. He's on good terms with my bosses at the Southern Pacific.
Smoke got his meaning. The station master did not like Cyrus Longacre, but he wasn't going to speak up against him. It might get him in trouble with his own employer. But the station master surprised Smoke.
I don't care much for some of the men who work for Mr. Longacre. They seem to me like nothing more than hired guns.
Smoke wasn't shocked to hear Longacre had employed gunslingers to help push his spur line through. Still, from the sound of disapproval in the station master's voice, the situation was worse than usual.
Something going on up there I should know about if I'm headed in that direction?
Oh, it's not my place to spread rumors.
We're just a couple of fellas talking, and I'm not about to spread around anything I hear inside this office.
Well, there's talk there might be some trouble between Mr. Longacre and some Paiute Indians who live on the other side of Halltown. I've heard there might even be another Paiute war if things keep going the way they are.
The mention of the Indians rang an alarm bell in Smoke's mind. He already thought Matt's summons might have something to do with the reborn Indian ring. What he was hearing from the station master added weight to that theory.
Do you know what the problem is between Longacre and the Paiutes?
I honestly don't, but even if I did, I've probably said too much already. Like I told you, Mr. Jensen, it's not my place.
Smoke could tell he wasn't going to get any more information out of the man. He nodded.
Thanks, anyway. If you happen to see the old-timer I was asking about, you'll tell him I was here and I've gone on to Halltown?
I sure will. I'd be glad to do that.
So long, then.
Smoke headed north, following the route of the spur line Cyrus Longacre was building. But he soon veered off to the west into a range of hills. If Matt's problems stemmed from Longacre and the Indian ring, Smoke planned to stay out of sight as much as possible as he proceeded toward Halltown. Just before dark, he stopped and made camp at the foot of a hogback ridge. In the interest of stealth, he didn't build a fire, but instead made a skimpy meal from the supplies he had picked up in Reno. He'd made many a cold camp back in his wandering days when he went by the name Buck West and was considered an outlaw. That was before he met Sally. Thinking about her as he sat with his back propped against a rock, her image was so vivid he felt he could reach out and stroke his fingers along the smooth skin of her cheek, let his hands stray through the silky strands of her dark hair, lean toward her and taste the warm sweetness of her mouth.
Daydreaming like a calf-eyed boy. I'll swan Smoke, you're getting careless in your old age. If I was out for your hair, you'd be...
Putting a bullet through your scrawny old gizzard right now, preacher.
Smoke moved his hand just enough to reveal the Colt he held alongside his leg.
Yeah, I was feeling a mite homesick. But I still knew you were there. Shoot, I smelled 40-year-old bear grease on those buckskins of yours 5 minutes ago.
Well, I'm glad to know that being an old married man ain't made you totally soft.
Smoke stood up to greet the man who was as much of a father to him as his own pa, God rest his soul. He grabbed Preacher's outstretched hand, then they pulled one another into a fierce hug.
I asked about you and Reno.
I decided not to go there, Smoke. I had some trouble over yonder in Wyoming. The engine ring sent some varmints after me, and the only reason I can figure out why they do that is to keep me from getting a mat. You got any idea what sort of scrape Matt's gotten himself into this time?
Nope. All I know is that I got a wire from him, telling me to rattle my hawks to a place called Halltown. Helltown, I'm told some folks call it.
Helltown. Yeah, that sounds like a place where Matt would wind up.
How did you know where to look for me?
I figured you'd start for this Helltown place after you came through Reno. I know you'd stay off the beaten path, and it seemed a likely path for you to follow. So when I got here yesterday, I just sort of squatted to wait for you. Found me a high spot and kept an eye on the countryside. I seen you coming this way before it got dark.
You always did have eyes like an eagle.
You want to head for the settlement tonight?
No, I've never been to Halltown before, and I wouldn't want to miss it in the dark. Let's ride on in the morning. Ought to be there by the middle of the day. That's soon enough.
You hope? We don't know what sort of fix Matt's in.
Well, that's true, we don't. I'd hate to get there too late to help him.
Late the next morning, Smoke and Preacher rode into Halltown. It appeared to be a bustling settlement, and it would grow and thrive once the railroad got there. Smoke hadn't shaved, so his cheeks and jaw were covered by beard stubble. His hat was pulled low over his face. It wasn't much of a disguise. If the Indian ring had killers looking for him and Preacher, they would definitely be spotted. It was impossible to make Preacher look like anything other than what he was, an old mountain man. As they entered the main street, Preacher nodded ahead.
You see what I see up yonder at the other end of town, Smoke?
It's a gallows, but there's nobody hanging from it.
Yet.
A man stood on the death platform testing the mechanism of the trap door. It looked like an execution was imminent.
You don't reckon that Matt?
I don't know. Let's see if we can find out.
An air of excitement gripped the town. Hangings did that. But some people seemed to be eagerly anticipating the hanging, while others appeared to be upset about it. Luckily, no one was paying much attention to the two strangers in their midst. Smoke and Preacher pulled up in front of a general store, dismounted, tied their horses to the hitch rail, and went up the steps to the mercantile's porch. Saloons were usually the best place to find out what was going on in the town, but they were also a likely spot to be discovered by the ring's hired guns. Somebody in the store ought to be able to tell them what all the hoopla was about.
I know, I feel
an attractive young woman with red hair stood behind the counter in the rear of the store, talking to a middle-aged matron.
Well, let me know when that calico comes in.
I certainly will.
When the older woman left, Smoke ambled toward the counter, gave the redhead a nod and a friendly smile. The look she gave him in return was downright frosty.
If you're one of Mr. Longacre's new men, we'd just as soon not have your business.
So, she had taken him for a gunman. Well, that didn't come as much of a surprise.
No, ma'am. My pard and I don't work for Longacre. The fact is, right now we don't work for anybody. We're sort of on the drift, I reckon you'd say.
I see. Do you need supplies?
Well, maybe. Mostly, though, we'd sort of like to know what's going on here in town today. Is it a holiday we don't know about?
The redhead sniffed, and Smoke saw tears shining in her eyes.
No, it's not a holiday. They're getting ready to hang an innocent man.
She glanced at the banjo clock on the wall.
Any minute now, in fact.
Smoke stiffened. He didn't have time to be discreet anymore.
This innocent man they're fixing to hang, his name wouldn't be Matt Jensen, would it?
The young woman's beautiful green eyes opened wide in amazement, looking from Smoke to Preacher, who had stopped to look at a glass-fronted display case full of penny candy. Then she looked back again.
Oh my God, you're Smoking Preacher!
Smoke reached across the counter and grabbed her arm.
You know Matt? He's the one they're going to hang?
The woman jerked her head in a nod.
Yes, at noon! They said he killed a woman, but he didn't do it. I know he didn't do it. It's all part of Cyrus Longacre's plan.
Smoke had heard enough. They could find out all the details from Matt once they got him out of this mess. And they did not have much time to do it. The hands on the wall clock stood at 2 minutes until 12. Smoke whirled away from the counter.
Preacher, come on. They're about to hang Matt.
Tarnation. I was afraid it was going to be something like that when we saw that dang gallows.
He ran onto the porch and saw crowds of people swarming around the gallows. Based on what the young woman had said, Matt had some friends in Halltown, but they seemed to be outnumbered. Smoke's gaze darted here and there, picking out men who appeared to be hard cases, probably more Longacre's hired guns. A tingling sense of excitement and fear swirled through the town, like the electric crackle in the air before a terrible thunderstorm was about to break. The knot of men forced their way through the crowd toward the gallows. The group bristled with rifles, shotguns, and pistols. In their midst, striding along with his back held straight and defiant, was a tall, fair-haired figure, Matt.
Grab the horses, Preacher. No time for anything fancy.
Damn right! Cut loose your wolf, boy! Let it howl!
Time was up. Hope was gone. Smoke and Preacher were not going to get there. Even if they rode in right then, it was too late. Longacre had at least 24 men scattered along the street, not to mention Sheriff Walt Sanger and the corrupt lawman's deputies. Nobody could stop the hanging.
Nobody but me.
Matt looked through the crowd and saw Longacre and Judd Talley waiting at the foot of the steps leading up to the gallows. Longacre had his thumbs hooked in his vest and wore a solemn expression, as if he were there to see justice done. Talley didn't bother with any pretense. His usual arrogant smirk stretched across his face, telling all the world that he was going to enjoy what he was about to witness. He would go out fighting. He'd make them shoot him, so at least he wouldn't have to endure the indignity of kicking out his life at the end of a rope. His biggest regret was that he wouldn't get to see Smoke and Preacher again. Matt's eyes widened in surprise. His head jerked around, and so did everyone else's. He saw two familiar figures on horseback galloping toward him. The crowd scrambled to get out of the way of the pounding hooves.
Stop them! Kill Jensen!
They hadn't bothered to tie Matt's hands, planning to do that once he was on the gallows. Bad mistake, that one. Matt's right hand shot out, grabbed the twin barrels of the sheriff's shotgun and wrenched them upward as his left hand crashed into Sanger's face. Matt whirled to drive the butt of the weapon into the belly of a deputy. He whipped the shotgun around so it pointed at Longacre and Talley. The remaining deputies leaped out of the way. Talley jerked his gun out. He launched himself at Longacre and drove the railroad man out of the way just as Matt pulled the trigger. The buckshot tore into the gallows steps, but Longacre and Talley had rolled clear of the charges. Longacre's gunnies tried to draw beads on Smoke and Preacher. They were moving too fast, their guns roaring. Smoke and Preacher closed in on the gallows.
Matt!
Smoke reached down. The next instant, Matt swung up on the Palouse's back behind the saddle. Smoke sent the big horse racing past the gallows while Preacher brought up the rear, twisting from side to side, firing his Remington. the three of them galloped out of Halltown, while Cyrus Longacre practically danced in a fit of apoplectic rage.
Go after them! Go after them!
Nobody seemed in too much of a hurry to do that until Judd Tally gathered a group of Longacre's gun hawks out of the confusion in the street and set off in pursuit. By that time, the only sign that remained of Smoke, Matt, and Preacher was a dwindling haze of dust. The Palouse was big enough and strong enough to carry double without much trouble, but the added weight cut down on the gallant animal's speed and stamina. After galloping for a couple miles, Preacher signaled to Smoke they should stop.
Matt, change horses! I don't weigh as much as Smoke does, so it'll leaven it out better. This old stallion of mine can handle it.
Good idea.
As Matt slipped down from the Palouse and swung up behind Preacher, Smoke looked back toward the settlement. He saw a pillar of trail dust rising between them and Halltown.
Looks like Longacre's men are coming after us.
What'd you expect? He must want Matt dead mighty bad.
He wants all three of us dead now, I'll bet. Thanks for showing up and pulling me out of there. I was about to make a grab for a gun and go down slinging lead. I wasn't about to be hanged.
What in blazes is this mess all about, anyway?
We can talk about that later, if we're still alive. Right now, we better find a place to hole up. Otherwise, we're going to be trading bullets with Longacre's gunnies in a few minutes.
Follow me.
They set off again at a gallop. Matt sent them toward the village of Chief Walking Hawk.
Paiutes are at the center of this. Longacre wants their land. He needs to build a trestle over Big Bear Wash, but the treaty gives the Paiutes control over the best place to do so.
Why doesn't he just buy a right-of-way from them? If he's rich enough to build a spur line, he ought to be able to afford that.
I reckon he could, but he doesn't think he should have to. He believes he has the right to just take what he wants, and the Indian Ring is backing him up.
Of all the dang fool things, all this because the varmint's too full of himself to pay for what he wants?
And that's what happens when a man gets too full of himself. It's not a matter of money anymore. Longacre's mad because somebody dared to stand up to him. So he's got to crush them to teach everybody else a lesson.
Yeah, and he's willing to do whatever it takes, even having his own mistress murdered.
Smoke glanced over at Matt in disbelief. He went on to explain about Virginia Barry's death and how Longacre and Tally made it look like he was responsible.
I figure his cronies back in Washington put some pressure on him to make getting rid of me look legal. That's the only reason for him to go to so much trouble.
I think you're probably right. The whole thing's gone too far now, though. Longacre won't worry about keeping up any pretense. He'll just have his men kill us on sight.
How much farther is this Paiute village you talked about, boy?
There's Big Bear Wash up ahead. Follow it, and we'll be at the village in another few minutes.
Smoke glanced at their back trail again. Judging by the cloud of dust, their pursuers had closed in a little, but not enough to stop them from reaching the Paiute village.
You know, we'll be bringing down trouble on the heads of those folks.
They've already got trouble. I don't think Longacre's men will attack the village. Even with all the extra gunnies he's hired, there still aren't enough of them to take on the whole tribe. At least, that's what I'm hoping.
As Matt predicted, a few minutes later, they came in sight of the conical wooden lodges. They were clustered among some scrubby trees along the bank of a small creek that flowed into the wash, where the water was swallowed up by the sandy ground. It was not a very appealing place, typical of the land the government was willing to cede to the Indians by treaty. But no matter how good or bad it was, it belonged to the Paiutes, and Cyrus Longacre had no right to come in and take it. Judging by the number of lodges, approximately 500 people lived there, and that meant at least 100 warriors. The Paiutes were peaceful now, but in the past they had put up quite a struggle at various times against the whites encroaching on their territory. Smoke knew a couple dozen gunmen wouldn't likely attack the village. But it would only be a matter of time before Longacre came up with some other way to strike at his enemies. In particular, Smoke, Matt, and Preacher. Men gathered at the edge of the village, some holding rifles, others armed with bows and arrows. A big man with graying hair and a dignified demeanor stepped out in front of the others.
Is that Walking Hawk?
Yeah, he ought to remember me. I came out here and talked to him a couple times.
Smoke and Preacher brought their mounts to a halt when they were still about 20 feet from the group of warriors. Tension filled the air, and it did not ease when Matt slid down from the horse and walked forward, his hand upraised with the palm out.
Chief Walking Hawk, it's good to see you again.
Walking Hawk nodded gravely.
And you, Matt Jensen, who are these men?
My family, Smoke Jensen and Preacher.
The surprise that showed on Walking Hawk's face gave a lie to the idea that Indians never expressed emotion. Some of the warriors recognized the name too, judging by the muttering among them.
Looks like they've heard of you, Preacher.
Yeah, well, that ain't always a good thing. I'm on good terms with the Paiutes, though, as far as I can recollect anyway.
Walking Hawk nodded toward Matt's companions.
Ghost Killer?
That's right.
I have heard of Smoke Jensen as well. All of you are welcome in our village.
Thank you, Chief. But I have to warn you, Longacre's men are after us. They may pursue us all the way here, or they may turn back when they realize where we've gone.
Let them come. They will wish they had turned back.
Matt couldn't help but grin.
Thanks, Chief. I was hoping you'd feel that way.
There is more trouble?
I'm afraid so.
Come, we will talk.
Walking Hawk offered the hospitality of a meal before their talk, as they sat cross-legged in the village's largest lodge. Smoke, Matt, and Preacher enjoyed the bowls of stew one of Walking Hawk's wives brought them. They knew to follow Walking Hawk's lead through the Paiute social protocol, as strict as any in so-called civilized societies.
I sent my warriors to watch the trail along the wash. They saw the men from the settlement following your tracks.
Longacre's gun crew.
Walking Hawk nodded.
When those men realized where your trail led, they stopped and talked among themselves for a while, then turned and rode back toward the town. They did not want to risk the wrath of the Paiutes.
Just like I thought would happen. Thanks again for taking us in, Chief. You probably saved our lives.
For now. From what you told us, Matt, Longacre won't stand still for this. He'll figure out a way to come after us.
And then you should go. If you ride away from here and do not come back, you would be safe.
And let that varmint Longacre get away with what he's trying to do to you and what he almost did to Matt? No offense, Chief, but there ain't no way in Hades that's happening.
Your answer does not surprise me, Ghost Killer. Will you slip into the camp of the enemy and cut all their throats while they sleep?
Yeah, well, I reckon I could, mind you, but I ain't sure that's the best way to go.
In the eyes of the law, we're fugitives now. Matt will be wanted for murder, and Preacher and me'll be wanted for rescuing him from the hanging. I've lived that sort of life, and I don't want to go back to it. I've got a wife to love, and a ranch to run.
Then what do we do?
We need to prove that the charges against you are bogus, Matt. If we can establish Longacre framed you for killing that girl, then I reckon that would clear Preacher and me from helping you too.
How can we do that? Those people who testified at the trial were telling the truth about seeing Virginia argue with me. Well, but hang on. That hotel clerk in the Sierra House lied. He said he heard Virginia scream after I went upstairs. That's not possible because she was already dead. But if we could get hold of that clerk and make him tell the truth in front of a real lawman...
If he would admit that Longacre either forced him or paid him off to lie at the trial, it would go a long way toward clearing your name, Matt.
That wouldn't prove you didn't kill the gal, Matt.
No, but it's a start. Maybe the clerk saw Tally go upstairs while Virginia was still alive. I'm convinced he's the one who really killed her.
Like Matt said, it's a start. We'll knock Longacre's house of cards down one at a time if we have to. But I've got a hunch if we yank just one of them, the whole thing's liable to collapse.
How are we going to get our hands on that clerk? If we show our faces in town, all hell's bound to break loose.
That's right. And we don't have much time either. You know Longacre better than we do, Matt. How long is he going to wait before he makes his next move?
Not long at all. Wouldn't surprise me if he's already up to something else rotten.
Cyrus Longacre had run out of patience in the sitting room of his suite.
I want them found and killed. All three of them, by God. Do you understand me, Sheriff?
The lawman looked more miserable and hangdog than ever.
Well, yeah, sure, Mr. Longacre, but I only got a few deputies.
Deputize Judd and his men. In fact, I don't care if you take any of your deputies or townsmen with you. My man will be enough. Although they've certainly failed spectacularly at most jobs I've given them recently.
We won't let you down, boss. I want Jensen and his friends dead more than I've ever wanted anything else.
See to it, then. Take the sheriff along so it'll be legal.
Nobody's gonna question the killing of three fugitives.
Blast it! I can't afford to have any stain of suspicion now. Not with the army coming in any time now.
The army?
That's right. There's a troop of cavalry on the way here right now. As soon as they arrive, Halltown will be placed under martial law due to the Paiute uprising and the rampant lawlessness gripping the area.
What Paiute uprising?
The one that has the townspeople living in terror of an attack.
Nobody said nothing to me about it.
They will. They'll tell the soldiers how afraid they are, and the ranchers on the other side of Big Bear Wash will confirm that the Indians have been stealing their stock and ambushing their cowboys.
Walking Hawk and his people haven't done anything like that.
Good Lord! Do you people want the railroad to come in here and make all your lives better or not?
Well, sure, but...
Then it's time for this farce to end! To save the town and the ranches, the cavalry will wipe out the Paiutes. I'll build my bridge, and everything will be fine. I just don't want to take a chance on Jensen and his friends talking to the authorities.
But if they're holed up with the Indians, there ain't no way to get them out. Not until the soldiers get here anyway. And then you run the risk of them getting to the officer in charge of the troop.
You're not telling me anything I don't already know, you addle-pated old fool.
Longacre swung toward Tally.
Judd?
Leave it to me, boss. I know just how we can get rid of Jensen and his friends once and for all.
After the excitement of Matt Jensen's rescue from the foot of the gallows died down, things went uneasily back to normal in Halltown. The feeling that violence might break out at any minute still hung over the town, however. Colin Ferguson lowered himself into the chair behind the desk in his office in the hotel. His bad leg ached from weariness. He'd spent the afternoon going around town trying to stir up some support for opposing Cyrus Longacre's reign of terror. His efforts resulted in failure.
Colin, I'm honestly baffled as to what you think so bad about Longacre. Look, the railroad represents progress and profit for the town. It'll mean more guests at your hotel, more customers at your store. And the best route extends through the lush cattle range between there and the mountain.
Give Longacre what he wants. That's the best for the town, and more importantly, nobody else gets hurt.
Look, what does it matter if the Paiutes lose their land? Or even their lives? They're just savages, after all. And I've heard they're planning to attack the town. It's just a matter of time before the Paiutes go on a bloodthirsty rampage.
Heavens, Colin, you know Matt Jensen killed that girl and deserved to hang. They showed all the evidence in court.
Ferguson could understand why most folks thought Matt was guilty. He and Maureen might have condemned Matt, too, if they hadn't gotten to know him. Nobody wanted to risk their own lives and maybe the lives of their families by standing up to Longacre over a no-good killer. Ferguson opened a drawer in his desk and took out a bottle and a glass. The whiskey wouldn't help the situation that plagued Halltown, but it might ease the ache in his leg a little. It might also allow him to forget for a moment that he and his niece were probably the only friends Matt Jensen had left in Halltown. Ferguson was just about to imbibe when the office door opened. He looked up and saw Maureen standing there.
What is it, girl? Why aren't you at the store?
When he noticed how pale Maureen's face was and saw the fear in her green eyes, he knew something was terribly wrong. He started up from his chair. Maureen stumbled a little as she was pushed into the room. Judd Tally's huge form loomed behind her, making her look almost like a child. The gun in his hand came up and pointed at Ferguson.
Don't try anything, old man. I don't want to shoot you, but I will if I have to.
What are you doing? Is this some sort of holdup?
Not even close. You two are coming with me, old man.
But why?
Tally just grinned.
The hotel clerk's name is Joseph Spivey, if I remember right from the trial. I don't know where he lives, but I'm sure Mr. Ferguson can tell you. Once it gets dark, if you can make it to the hotel without anybody seeing you, Preacher, you can slip in the back door and talk to Mr. Ferguson.
Oh, you remember who you're talking to, boy.
Walking Hawk nodded solemnly.
No one sees Ghost Killer if Ghost Killer does not want to be seen.
Dang right.
If we can get our hands on Spivey, we can take him to Carson City and go all the way to the governor if we have to get somebody in authority to listen to us. Now, I'm sure we can count on the governor of Colorado to put in a word for us if need be.
Sounds like a good plan as long as Longacre doesn't come up with something else in the meantime. He's bound to be frustrated enough now that I wouldn't put much of anything past him.
From the sound of it, there wasn't much he wouldn't do to start with. Having a woman killed just to frame you, Matt. A bullet in the head's just too good for a snake like that.
As he came abreast of the Sierra House, Captain Edward McKee of the U.S. Cavalry raised his hand in a signal for the line of mounted troopers following him to halt. McKee turned his head to his non-com.
Have the men dismount, Sergeant, but stand ready to ride again.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Haney turned to the troop.
Dismount!
McKee took his gauntlets off as he went into the hotel. The desk clerk stared at him. McKee approached the man to ask for Mr. Cyrus Longacre.
Captain?
The man reached the bottom of the stairs and came toward McKee with an outstretched hand.
I'm Cyrus Longacre. I believe you were supposed to meet me here.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
McKee grasped the railroad man's hand and gave it a brief shake. He much preferred exchanging salutes, but you couldn't do that when you were dealing with civilians. For that matter, he preferred not to deal with civilians at all. But he was a soldier. He followed orders, and his were to report to Longacre, assess the situation, and render all due aid to the man in putting down an uprising of the local Indian tribe.
You arrived a little sooner than I expected.
My orders were to proceed here without delay. My men can cover a lot of ground in a hurry when need be.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. Come up to my suite and have a drink with me.
McKee hesitated, but after the long ride he and his men had just made, a drink sounded very appealing.
I have some excellent cigars as well.
That made up the captain's mind.
Lead on, sir.
A few minutes later, with his hat off, McKee was comfortably ensconced in an armchair in the sitting room of Longacre's suite. He had a glass of brandy in one hand and a fine Cuban cigar in the other.
To the U.S. Cavalry, the finest fighting force in the world.
I'll drink to that.
McKee tossed back the brandy and enjoyed the warm feeling it kindled in his belly. That was exactly what he needed.
So, tell me about these Indians who are causing trouble.
For the next half hour, McKee listened as Longacre recited a litany of complaints about the Paiutes. According to the railroad man, the savages had attacked his surveying parties, attacked the men he sent out to negotiate a right-of-way agreement with Chief Walking Hawk, rustled cattle from the ranchers on the other side of Big Bear Wash, threatened the cowboys who tried to recover those stolen cattle, and promised to make war on Halltown itself, leaving the settlement's citizens in a state of fear. When Longacre finished, McKee nodded.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs is supposed to send an agent out here as soon as possible, but that may not be for a couple of months. The Secretary of War has given me instructions in the meantime. Pacify the Indians, and move them off the land they currently hold, pending review of their rights under the treaty they signed several years ago. Does that agree with your view of the situation, Mr. Longacre?
Very much so.
McKee found it very unusual that the War Department would involve itself in what was essentially a business matter, and he suspected there was some sort of connection between Longacre and the political bosses in Washington.
Those sorts of things are none of my business. I have my orders.
Well, I'm just glad you're here, Captain. I know this ordeal will soon be over, and I can get on with the job of building my railroad line.
Yes, sir.
When do you expect to have the Paiutes moved out?
We'll begin operations against them first thing tomorrow morning.
And if they don't cooperate?
We'll do whatever is necessary to compel them.
Longacre smiled.
Another drink?
Don't mind if I do.
Preacher rode out at dusk. In the uncertain light, the old mountain man in his buckskins and the rangy gray stallion he rode were hard to see, especially since he knew how to take advantage of every bit of cover. Preacher led the stallion forward in almost complete silence. He stopped in a grove of trees not far from the edge of town and tied horse's reins to one of the slender trunks. Preacher gave the animal a reassuring pat on the shoulder.
I'll be back for you, old fella.
Then, he cat-footed toward the back of the building closest to him. Preacher studied the town's layout as he approached and plotted how he would get to Collins Hotel, picking out the deepest patches of shadow and other cover along the course he would take. He moved slowly. Stealth was more important now than speed. When Preacher reached the back of the hotel, he went to the unlocked rear door. He slipped inside with ease and continued in search of Colin Ferguson's office. No light showed under the office door when Preacher found it. He could hear people moving around in the hotel and wanted to get out of sight before somebody wandered along the corridor and spotted him.
Dang it.
He tried the knob. It turned under his fingers. He opened the door just long enough to slip into the pitch-dark office.
What now?
Thinking maybe Ferguson had left something that would tell where he was, Preacher moved carefully. With one hand outstretched and the other resting on the butt of one of the Remingtons, he made his way across the room toward the spot where a desk should be sitting. A moment later, he found the desk. He fished a lucifer out of his pocket and lit it with a flick of his thumbnail. He'd just take a quick look around.
Good God.
In the glow of the match, Preacher saw the desk littered with papers, and standing out in bold relief on them were several drops of blood scattered in a curving line across the desk. The chair behind the desk lay on its back. There'd been a tussle, which meant wherever Colin Ferguson was, he probably had not gone there of his own accord.
I just hope he's still alive.
Cyrus Longacre slipped his hand under his coat and closed his fingers around the butt of a small pistol in his shoulder holster. He went to the door.
Who is it?
Just me, boss.
Recognizing Judd Talley's voice, Longacre let go of the pistol and opened the door. The big gunman came into the room, wearing his usual self-satisfied smirk.
You took care of that matter we discussed earlier?
Longacre closed the door. Talley took off his hat and tossed it casually on a side table as he nodded.
Yeah. Ferguson put up a little fight, but it didn't amount to much. We got him and the girl stashed. Nobody'll ever find him unless we want him to.
Not that same shack your men used before, I hope.
No, Jensen knows about that one. They're in a cave up in the hills. I left 8 good men guarding them. There won't be any slip-ups this time, boss.
Good. You sent a rider to the Paiute village?
Yeah. He wasn't too crazy about the idea, but I told him he'd be safe enough as long as Jensen knows we've got Ferguson and his niece. I just hope you're right about Jensen and those other meddlers being with the Redskins.
Where else could they hide out as easily and still be relatively close to town? They'll be there. I'd bet almost anything on it.
Well, if they are, my man will deliver the message.
I've been thinking. I have another job for you. There's another weak link we need to take care of. Joseph Spivey.
Tch, the hotel clerk?
That's right. He's the only one who testified at the trial who actually lied. If he were to change his testimony about when he heard Virginia scream, it would cast doubt on the whole case. I don't want to take a chance on him talking to any outside authorities.
You want me to get rid of Spivey, just to make sure?
That's right. Don't do it here in town. No, take him somewhere out of the settlement and leave his body where it won't be found.
I can do that. Where is he? Working downstairs at the desk?
Nah, I already checked on that. He's not working tonight. He has a little house on one of the side streets.
Longacre pushed a crude map into Tally's hand.
All right, I'll go take care of it right now. No point in putting it off.
None at all. I'll feel better once it's done. Captain McKee seems like an agreeable man, the sort that won't cause any trouble for us. But I'd like to be sure there's no chance of him hearing anything he shouldn't.
Tally nodded, picked up his hat, and left the room. Two gun wolves Tally bossed were waiting for him on the front porch. He jerked his head at them, and they followed him to the edge of the street.
I've got a job for the two of you. That hotel clerk Spivey needs to be taken care of. Grab him, take him out of town somewhere, and make sure nobody finds him.
Not unless it's a buzzard or a coyote, eh, Judd?
Nobody. I want him planted good and proper.
Sure, we understand. Right now?
Yeah.
Tally gave the two killers Longacre's map.
Remember, keep it quiet while you're here in town.
The men nodded and drifted off into the night on their mission of murder. The varmints never looked back. There was no reason for them to. They thought they had the whole town buffaloed. They never saw the lean, dark shape slipping through the shadows behind them. Preacher'd been counting on Colin Ferguson to tell him where to find the hotel clerk, Spivey. Obviously, judging by the blood he'd found in Ferguson's office, something bad had happened to the man. Preacher wanted to get to the bottom of that, but his job was to grab Spivey, the man who could start breaking up the murder frame around Matt. Spivey clerked at the Sierra House. Under the circumstances, Preacher supposed that would be the best place to start looking for him. Luck had brought him to the alley beside the hotel when the towering gunman and his two pards stepped into the street. Preacher had seen the big man earlier when he and Smoke rescued Matt from the hanging. He knew from talking to Matt since the man was Judd Tally, Longacre Segundo, and probably the one who really killed that girl. Preacher could have picked him off then and there and been done with it. But before he could draw his guns, he heard Tally say something about Spivey. The old mountain man wasn't close enough to make out all the words, but unless there was some other Spivey in town, they were talking about the man Preacher wanted to find. After a minute, Tally and the two men split up. Tally started across the street toward one of the saloons, while the two gunnies walked off like they were setting out on some sort of mission. Preacher had to play his hunch. He followed. It was easy enough, since that possibility never occurred to them. The trail led to a shabby little house on the edge of town. No lights burned in the windows, but the two gunmen went to the door anyway. A moment later, Preacher saw a faint glow inside the house. Somebody had lit a candle or a lamp. The door swung open, spilling out enough light to reveal the two hardened killers waiting on the porch. As he crouched nearby in the shadows, preacher saw the look of surprise on the man who opened the door. The man tried to slam it, but one of the intruders shoved it back.
Are you Spivey?
What do you want? I haven't done anything. Leave me alone.
Lamplight reflected off cold steel as one of the men shoved a gun barrel up under the man's chin.
Blasted, answer the question. Are you Spivey?
Yes, I...
You're coming with us then.
He stepped back, still covering Spivey, while the other man reached for the terrified hotel clerk, who wore a nightshirt and peered at him through round spectacles. Preacher knew why Tally sent those men to Spivey's house. Longacre decided the hotel clerk needed to be shut up permanently. The old mountain man's arm lifted, went back, and shot forward again. More steel flickered through the night. The razor-sharp blade of Preacher's bowie knife, thrown with such force, buried its entire 8 inches into the back of the man trying to grab Spivey. One man down, and Preacher kept moving. As the second gunman turned toward his fallen comrade in surprise, Preacher palmed out one of the Remingtons and reversed it. The butt of the heavy revolver crashed against the gunman's head. Both men were down in a wink. Spivey stood in the doorway in his nightshirt, looking frightened and confused. Preacher flipped the Remington around again so he gripped the butt.
Joe Spivey? The clerk at the Sierra House?
Yes, who?
Preacher didn't let him go on. He rapped Spivey on the head, just hard enough to knock him out for a few minutes. Oh! Spivey collapsed.
You don't know it, son, but I just done you a heck of a favor, and you're gonna pay it back.
Smoke and Matt stood in the middle of the Paiute village as several warriors approached. A few fires still burned in the village, casting a dim glow over the scene. The warriors had a white man with them. A couple of them held his arms and forced him along. Walking Hawk followed behind him. Smoke's eyes narrowed as he studied the stranger. He didn't recall ever seeing the man before, but the man's hard features and the low-slung holster on his hip, now empty since he'd been disarmed by his captors, identified him as a gunman, probably one of Longacre's men. Walking Hawk stepped around the prison.
This man was captured by our sentries as he rode toward the village. He says he has a message for Matt Jensen and his friends.
Smoke moved closer to the man who had stopped struggling against the warriors.
Better speak up and make it quick, amigo. I think my friends here would enjoy having a little sport with you.
The implied threat of torture at the hands of the Paiutes made the man's jaw tighten, but he didn't give in to his fear.
I got a message from Matt Jensen.
Talk.
If you want to see that pretty red-headed Ferguson gal and her uncle again, you better come with me, all three of you.
Matt's gun came up level with the prisoner's face. He eared back the hammer.
What did you say?
We got Ferguson and the gal. You come with me, we'll turn them loose. If you don't...
Smoke and Matt both knew what he meant. The barrel of Matt's gun trembled a little as Matt struggled to control his anger.
Blowing his brains out won't help us any, Matt. We'll get them away from Longacre's men. Don't worry.
After a moment, Matt slowly lowered his gun and stepped back.
What are we gonna do?
You know where they're being held, don't you?
Can't make me talk.
You really believe that, friend? Take a look around.
The hard case glanced from side to side at the pitiless faces of the Paiutes who surrounded him.
You can't kill me. If I don't come back by morning, and if you're not with me, Ferguson and the girl will die. You can count on that.
Nobody's going to kill you.
You'll just wish we would.
Chief Walking Hawk nodded in solemn agreement. The gunman stared back at him defiantly, and after another moment, Smoke shrugged.
All right, Chief.
Walking Hawk made a curt gesture to one of his men. They started to drag the prisoner away, and his resolve broke, cracked right in two, in fact.
Wait. Oh, for God's sake, I'll tell you where they're being held.
Figured you might.
But you can't kill me. You need me to get in there. Otherwise, they'll just kill the prisoners.
Don't worry. You're coming with us. And if anything happens to Maureen and Mr. Ferguson, I can promise you one thing, mister. You'll be the next one to die.